Welcome back to the Dan Time Podcast. How's it going? How are you doing so far in 2025? You've got it all figured out by now. It's all corrected and back on track, I'm sure. Well, Dan Time is back. Another episode, of course, every Sunday. This one, number 82 of the project. I really appreciate you subscribing to the show, maybe on occasion mentioning it to a friend, a coworker, or that guy Dan that you know, or that Danielle in your life, or a Danny with an I, Danny with a Y. I hope you're getting something out of it. Maybe you've discovered a new artist or an entire genre that you never thought you'd be jamming to. If so, then I'm doing my job. Dan Time is on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, X. If you follow Dan Time Pod on those platforms, you get a chance to grow in your fandom for this show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or a guest nomination, or if you'd like to try to sell me something and maybe send me a flattering message that is completely AI generated and maybe also goes out to hundreds, if not thousands, of other recipients, email me, blast email me, personalize email me. I really don't discriminate. DanTimePod@gmail.com. Okay, today I am reconnecting with Boston's very own Danielle Moralia, one of the early singer-songwriters from the show. She appeared on episode number 18, December 11th, 2023. This is the 20th anniversary of her debut record, Nothing Romantic. We dive into a few tracks from this album and talk about how the material is still very relatable and transferable to what's going on in the world today, and how many of Danielle's fans still come up to her today and tell her how much they love the record. Danielle Moralia is a two-time New England Music Award winner, 2021 for Blues Act of the Year and 2019 for Female Performer of the Year. She's also a four-time Boston Music Award nominee for Blues Artist of the Year. Her 2020 release, Bright Shining Stars, reached number 15 on the Billboard Blues charts. And Paul Collins of the Nashua Telegraph wrote, "I don't believe there's an audience anywhere who wouldn't be blown away after seeing a performance by this gifted Boston-based singer, songwriter, and guitarist extraordinaire." Check out Danielle's website at DanielleM.com. Upcoming performances: tonight's show in Woodstock, New York, canceled due to weather. Tuesday, January 21st, weather dependent there also, I'm sure. Cambridge, Massachusetts at the Lizard Lounge. Saturday, February 1st in Norwood, Mass. Danielle and Peter Parsek present Three Kings, the music of B.B. King, Freddie King, and Albert King. On February 6th, Danielle Moralia's Drinks with Friends at Sanctuary Barside in Maynard, Mass. February 8th, she's with Lisa Bastoni at Crossroads Music Series, North Andover. March 9th, Lancaster, PA. April 4th, Tupelo Music Hall, Derry, New Hampshire. Some more April dates: the 19th, Mansfield, Massachusetts. 26th, Ridgewood, New Jersey. And April 27th, Brooklyn, New York. Don't forget to go to patreon.com/DanielleM. We talk about it in these two episodes. Let's get to the first part of this conversation. Folks, it is Danielle Moralia time. Danielle Moralia, how are you doing today, Danielle?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing all right. My schedule's a little off from a work situation. Don't really want to get into it, but I'm here.
I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're here.
And what I was going to say is, if you've been listening for a few months or since the beginning, you may have heard me say at the end of an episode, "Hey, I'd love to have you back. It'd be great to do another episode. Let's do it sometime." I don't just say that. I say that if I legitimately would like to reconnect and see what's happening with this singer-songwriter or whoever it may be, a lot of different creatives on the show, what's been happening for the past year. And so I couldn't wait for this one. It was really awesome to reconnect with Danielle. It's been a busy year. And how did 2024 treat you? That's so open-ended, but...
How did it treat me? it's been good. I've been busier. You know, I've gotten back to more of a full gig schedule, which is good. I had a handful of songs that I thought I might throw away, but now I'm going to record them. You know, pending November results, I was like, maybe I could just never play these ever again. And then it was like, oh, God, now I have to record these.
Almost sent them to the trash, but you didn't empty the trash.
Yeah,
bin.
I was like, just in case. And then I was like, all right, I guess these are gonna go out. These are gonna get recorded. So that's that. Yeah, it's a weird. I don't know. Honestly, today is a weird day in general. Just with it. I don't know if you do you like not like to talk about current things because it time stamps it too much.
No, I do.
It's kind of hard not to talk about what's happening right now. I'm a combination of incredibly depressed in the state of the world and feeling really grateful and lucky because my husband and my stepson moved out to Venice Beach like 4 months ago. So he's out in LA and knock on wood, he and his girlfriend are safe right now because they're in Venice Beach, but it's insane the fires that are happening there. And then on top of that, so I'm like sitting in my living room, you know, I'm doom scrolling, doing that whole thing. And then, you know, I never say this guy's name that's going into office because I just refuse to mention his name. But the man whose name I will not mention.
Yes.
Hence the single that we're going to talk about.
Right.
You know, all the crazy stuff that he's talking about right now. Like, just the fact that that's what's coming in right now. And then Jimmy Carter's funeral is happening. It's like this symbolism of just extreme darkness. It's like this beautiful human being who really lived it, you know, whether you're religious or not, you know, that man actually lived a Christian existence, really helped people, did what Christians are supposed to be doing. And now he's gone. I mean, he lived to 100, so that's a pretty good run.
Yeah.
But just to be like sitting there and then the funeral is happening and like, it's like this symbolic death of empathy and humanity. And it's really, anyway, but then I also feel really lucky that my loved ones are okay, you know, so.
Oh, you're right. It's just,
considering.
It's a loaded day. It's a loaded moment. Speaking of Jimmy Carter, I was born in 79. I've never really particularly wanted to date myself on this show, but there you have it, folks. 45-year-old dude. So I was always intrigued with Jimmy Carter. It's like, that's the guy who was president when I was born. I think everyone should be kind of curious about that kind of stuff. And I think at the end of his life, he's just a one-term president. I think that just kind of got washed away. And, you know, he's a lot of rich people who don't, you know, they say they hold certain values or they're a family man or whatever. But all they care about is enriching themselves and their interest and their people. At the end of the day, everybody wants to make it to 100.
Yeah.
And he got the 100 in his obituary. And then also, like you said, we're seeing the images come back, some of the video of Jimmy Carter and his character and what he was all about. And and there's a sadness attached to it, like you said. It's just...
I didn't realize till recently. I was listening to one of our local GBH shows, Jim and Marjorie, Boston Public Radio, and they had replayed an interview of his from 2014, and he had written a book about the subjugation of women in the world in all the different countries, including here, you know, some of what happens here and what's happened over the year, and the idea that a man, you know, just at that time. You know, a 90-year-old, 90-year-old white man who's, you know, who's just lived a whole, you know, would have the empathy and foresight to write a book about that and put that out was like, you know, that's, I'm just like, can we just please, can we like take the DNA of his soul and just make a vaccine out of it.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Just like, can we spread empathy? Is there something we can do? You know, it's just, oh man. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to get so heavy, like right off the top, but it's just in my head. I was you know, heating up soup just now before we got on, and I was going, I don't know, man, am I going to be a good person to talk to right now? Can I talk about my stupid Patreon page right now?
Right.
So, the only way to do it was like, all right, well, let's just be honest about what's going on in the brain right now. So anyway, thank you for
absolutely.
Thanks for having me on.
Strange times indeed.
Yeah.
You know, there's so, just
anyway, we could talk about the silly light stuff.
Yeah.
Next, if you want.
So I do want to mention, folks, and this will be in the show notes as well, patreon.com/Danielle M. There's a lot to unlock here for as little as $1. Now, you know, if more than a dollar is not going to break the bank, feel free to subscribe and chip in a little more there. But here's what you get: mini guitar lessons, live shows, unreleased songs, just a loaded archive here. And what I'm really interested in talking about a little bit today, a Nothing Romantic Revisited.
Yeah.
Which is, now Danielle's released, is it 4 solo records in addition to the Glory Junkies album and maybe some other material I'm forgetting about in the single? But Nothing Romantic was the debut.
Yeah.
2005. I've been thinking about this a lot, Danielle. I've been listening to the record. And if you're of a certain age, when 2005 came around and you flash forward to now and you're like, my gosh, where did 20 years zip away?
Why does
anything that starts a year that begins with 20 something, it just doesn't feel that long ago.
Yeah.
But the record, Danielle, I'm not just saying this. I think most artists, or not every artist, is this fortunate that a 20-year-old record doesn't sound dated. It sounds like these songs and the message in some of these songs are so applicable today. The songwriting is especially for a debut, is...
Thank you.
Some of your best work. So, you know, because some artists, you know, if they released a record in 1984, 1994, or even 2004 or 5, it kind of sounds like that period for a lot of artists, and it's not really a knock on them. It's just, you know, kind of what they were churning out at the time. And there's just a very timeless quality to this record. I wonder if you feel the same way.
Well, it's interesting because it in some ways, it does feel timeless. In other ways, I go like, oh, I was in a different place then, you know, but probably with the more personal stuff, I'm like, oh, you know, I've come a long way. It's just like totally different person, right? But at the same time, you know, anything that's more topical, it's like, oh, wow, yeah, that's still, yeah. Still kind of applies. Or, but that album was my first full-length album, and it's like the first one that I would have wanted anybody to hear. And I don't tend to go back and listen to my own stuff because I cringe usually. But you know, I've had enough distance from it now that I will go back now and go, oh, that was pretty clever. You know, whatever it is, I'll go like, okay, yeah, all right, good job, 20 years ago me. And there is also a little bit of an openness and a different... I feel like with experience comes more boundaries sometimes, you know, like there's certain just chord structures I wouldn't do now just because I'm like, why would I go to that chord? You know, like whatever it is, it's just, I know more about theory now. So I've been doing these little, like you mentioned on the Patreon, I've been doing a thing called Nothing Romantic Revisited, and they're just these short little, like, I don't know, video blogs.
Yeah. Vlogs.
I don't know what you would call
it. I've never been able to pronounce
that correctly. That's like a dated way to put it. Anyway, yeah, vlog is like nobody says that anymore. But I mean, you know, it's so 10 years ago. But there's sort of these little video blogs where I do sort of a combination of a little mini half-assed guitar lesson about the song, or talk about the song, And then I play the song. Sometimes I play part of it if I'm being lazy, but sometimes I'll play the whole song. The last one I did, I forgot that the song had a bridge until afterwards. So I'm going to have to do a follow-up and be like, wait, I forgot about the bridge. Has anybody seen the bridge? But they've been kind of fun. You know, sometimes my cat makes an appearance, and the people who have been, just supporters, people who have supported me since that long ago, they still bring up that album. I feel like sometimes I'm like, I have other albums, you know, but that's,
yeah,
you know, and of course in my head, I'm like, they get better. They're getting better, you know, but people really liked that one more, probably more than any others that I've made. That's the one album where people are like, oh, I listened to that over and over again. And just, you know, I kept listening over and over again. So that's, you know, and we're talking on a small time level. I'm not saying, you know, it wasn't a Grammy, nominee or anything like that. It was just on this kind of grassroots level that I do things. And so I just thought, well, the 20-year anniversary is coming up. Maybe I'll put it out on vinyl or do something like that. I don't know if anybody gives a shit.
I think they
I don't know if they care, but I'm like, the people who really liked it might enjoy these little clips of just talking about it and going back. And because a lot of times too, you just phase out songs in your set. Like there's a couple of songs from it that I still play live, but there's a lot of them. Most of them I don't, because once I write new songs, I usually tend to like, I kind of only keep the ones that I really, really like playing the most.
Right.
So I've had this whole thing where I'm like, maybe I'll just do like I'll just reissue it and then maybe do like a show, like a re-release show and do all the songs from it or just something fun like that. You know, still kind of in the works on that one, but.
Well, and I might jump around here, but the song Better, I don't know if this comes out in the live set in 2024 or 2025, but there's, I like a lot about it. It's just kind of a playful song about maybe early romance. Maybe it's, you know, an ongoing romance, or maybe it's the beginning, but I love it. And this particular line, and I also want to talk, sometimes I forget to talk about the music too, but if you're of a certain age, maybe you can relate to this. And if you're younger, try doing this if somebody's away and you've got to, you know, correspond. How about that word? When I'm a prisoner, you're a perfume-scented letter. Now, I can still remember getting a letter in the mail from a girlfriend and it smelled like her perfume, and we hadn't seen each other in a couple months, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I know. That was like a nice time when you would get letters. You'd get actual physical letters in the mail. You had to write them out. I don't even think I could write a letter right now. I don't think you could read it if I tried to write a letter. My handwriting is atrocious. Like, it's never been great, but now it's like, I can't read my own writing. You know, I'm so used to typing stuff up. I'd have to do like a typed letter and then sign it.
Sign,
you know,
it, right.
If I were. It wouldn't be quite as romantic that way, but but that song has a lot of funny little pop culture-y references and all that, you know, it's kind of, and that was written for my husband who I'm still with.
Three years before that. Yeah, from our first conversation, I was like, maybe that's around the same time period.
It's definitely, and I have, it's been a little while since I've busted that one out, but it's one that stayed. It stuck for a long time. So that one might come back out. That was also like a picking thing that I was new to that. I'll do that. That one will be, I haven't done that one yet on the Patreon, but I'll talk about that one on the Patreon. But there's a picking thing there that I was learning that style of picking when I wrote that. So it was like, oh, let me do this with it. And so that's...
This record also is an introduction to people. If they saw you live around that time period, they saw you play the harmonica, but there's some harmonica solos on the record. Did you feel at that time, were those solos easy to record? Did you have to do a few takes where you're like, let's just let it rip, and that's the one? There's a really good one.
I think
Say One Thing, there's a good one on there.
Yeah, that's not me.
Oh my gosh.
That's my husband. That one is my husband. Because we were both kind of, in neither, you know, it's neither one of us are harmonica players, really. But he played hard. He was dabbling in it then, and I was dabbling in it then, as you do with harmonica.
Yeah.
You dabble. if you're not a pro, you dabble to everybody's chagrin usually. But yeah, he played on that one. That's probably the best harmonica performance on the album, because he played on it. He did it separately as a separate track. I played on Sell My Soul, another track, and I think he also played on Better. He might have played a harmonica thing on Better. Like, he did a couple of tracks of harmonica, and I did the one on Sell My Soul. So that little hook, wah, 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 that was like about the level that I was playing harmonica at, and it's still about the level that I play harmonica. By this time, 20 years later, I should be like, yeah, I can, want me to sit in on harp with you? I'm great. But I never really stuck with it. I just kept... It was like I use it for one or two songs when I play live, and I just, you know, it's like you can kind of pull it off for a couple of songs if you do a cross harp thing and do it sort of like a rhythmic thing. And it's honestly, I do it when I play the song Staggerly. It's like a traditional tune that I do like a stompy thing, and I pick it and I do some slidey stuff. It's like the sort of circus act, you know, where you go, right? Look at all the things I'm doing at once.
Oh, yeah. Like a real street musician who's trying to just use every limb and every...
Exactly. So that's about my level of harmonica right now. And, you know, there's some people out there who are such great... My friend Cheryl Arena is an amazing harmonica player, and I almost get embarrassed if I ever play harmonica in front of her. But, yeah, there's... So I've decided to keep it to a minimum.
Well, I'd like to see more of it, but... How about on the song Moment by Moment, which is, it's either, if it's not my favorite, it's my second favorite, just a very infectious song, the decision to put a bass solo in there.
Yeah, that's my husband as well. He's actually a bass player. It's a beautiful bass solo in that song.
You know, it's like, that's not, you don't always hear that. It doesn't always serve the song well. That's not always neat, frequently not needed. But in that song, it's like, whoa, it's like a...
Yeah.
If you're not expecting it.
He used a fretless bass for it, too. So it has this like cool kind of slidey vibe to it. Yeah. That's that one. I actually don't play that very much live anymore, but I just start. Somebody requested I played it at a house show a couple of weeks ago. But that one is, you know, that's one of the heavier tunes on the mm-hmm. on the album. And there, that track had, it also had our friend Trevor Mills, who's from Canada, on there playing Mando. And my friend Kevin So singing backup vocals. That was a nice track. I was happy with that track.
There's a lot of, I mean, that you could pick the chorus out, but I like this line. I want to know how you feel about it now. I think it's very applicable. People kind of stay in their bubble, stay in their little pocket. What's the noise on the other side of the door? I want to know what I'm missing. How do you feel about that? And, do you think it... Or what did it speak to back then?
It was just about the sort of distractions of not being in the moment.
Yeah.
I know that the reason that what inspired that song originally was a book called Moment by Moment. I don't know if it was by Thich Nhat Hanh or it was like a author who was inspired by him. I forget. But it was like this little book about mindfulness, basically, you know, and that's where that came. And I was thinking of it in terms of grief and in terms of, you know, regret of not being in the moment with someone who you've lost.
Yeah. There's that lyric, and this, I think, would put a lot of people back into a moment that they maybe regret, or they just remember, man, why was I in such a rush with that person? You were telling me a story, and I was looking at the clock.
Yeah.
There was some somewhere I had to be. I didn't have the time to talk. And then you go on to say how that, you later find out that person has died, and you're thinking, oh my gosh. I'd love to have that moment back.
Yeah.
That's a great song, driving around to listen to, I think, and just kind of reflect on maybe how busy we are these days, how occupied we are. I mean, we have conversations with like the people we love the most while looking at phones. Like, we are not even making eye contact, but we're kind of talking.
Yeah.
And it's like,
I mean, and
stuff.
That was like before those, before we were even in that era. That was like 2000. I probably wrote it in 2004. If I released it in 2005. So, you know, that was even before we were ultimately distracted.
Yeah.
So just, if you think of it that way too, like now we're really missing a lot with what, with just being glued to our screens. It's insane. I kind of think about it while it's happening now, and I go, I need to be like, I'll stop myself and be like, oh, I need to be in this moment. Oh, speaking of which, hold on 1 second. I'm going to say bye to my husband. He's at another door. Hold on 1 second. I'm sorry. All right. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I listened to this record, Danielle.
Anyway, but yeah.
I go back to 2005, and I kind of think, you know, about the things that were happening in my life in that year, and then I kind of go back a few years, and then I go back to 2005, and I'm like, that wasn't exactly the cutoff when we lost the old world. I mean, because things were happening. The Iraq War was going on. There was a lot of unrest in the world, as there is today, certainly after 2001, but there was just this kind of period in the early aughts where we still had a little bit of that innocence, like a little bit locally, wherever you lived, and you could still have some fun with your friends, and the way that we socialized in bars was just more engaging. Like, it was just people were, I don't know, a little bit livelier, it seems like. Maybe I'm just getting older, but I go back and I'm like, it's really, it's cool to talk about this record in 2025. And to reminisce about 05 and maybe learn some lessons.
Well, it was, we weren't as divided. Like we were divided. I think it was like I'm sure people, I know people have been divided throughout history, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, there was a civil war at one time. So I'm not saying that we, you know, we're newly divided, but it's a different, it's just, we're divided in a different way now. I mean, back then I remember, you know, there's another song on the album called You Don't Know Nothing. It's about having a conversation in a bar and like with somebody that you have completely different views on, different views with whom you have different. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting stuck on the grammar.
Yep. I love it.
I respect it.
But anyway, it's, I don't know. It's just very, it's a different world now. And that's one of the songs I still play. You Don't Know Nothing. I still play that now, and I always talk about how, you know, I'll say like, you know, remember back when we actually would talk to people that we disagreed with, and not just, we couldn't just block them or just, you know, do a diatribe on Facebook with your cat as your avatar and not even show your face, you know. And it was just like you could disagree and not despise each other, you know.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, it's very different now. It's just, it's like, it's really, the divide is like, it's like more like the beginnings of a civil war now than it was back then when it was just like, you're crazy. What do you mean by that? You know?
Right.
It's just, you know, we were looking at each other in the eyes when we were having these conversations. And on the occasion that it happens now, it's still, you know, it's weird, but there's, you have that little touch of humanity and you go, oh yeah, okay, no, we can, all right. You know, there's people who I know in real life who I've met in real life, and then I'll see them and I'll be like, I like that person so much. And then you see what they post on Facebook and you go, oh man.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I'm not even supposed to know that side of you. We're not supposed to know each other on that. Like, I don't want to know that. Like, I just want to, I hate it. I hate it.
I see it too. And sometimes I'm thinking, how are you comfortable talking in such depth about like such like vitriol? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. But some people do have very little or no inhibition.
Yeah.
I sometimes wish I had a little less, but you know, or
yeah. I used to be a lot more outspoken, like on social media about my views and things. You know, I don't do it on Facebook anymore because I'm like, you don't change minds, and then you just end up, it doesn't do any good. It's just, right. It's the reason we are where we are right now. Just the reason why this is happening. So it's not helping. So, you know, it's like we should just be figuring out ways to do it, to change minds in the real world, not on the screen, because it's not going to happen. You know,
I would like to see, you know, comments. If there's a comment section, maybe you don't, if you can't, if that news publication, or just if, I don't know, if you're commenting on a friend's post that you disagree with, that they just disable the like feature where you can't get 2,100 likes and you're prominently featured for your vitriol. It's like, if we took that away, or we forced people to like handwrite their comment, but then you really couldn't do that because...
Write a letter.
Yeah. Or even better, it's like, if you have something really hot to say, you've got to post a video of yourself saying it. How about that?
Oh, there are people doing that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but they, you know, the algorithm certainly does favor vitriol, you know.
Yeah.
And it also favors cats, so I just post my cat a lot.
I was going to say, I put this in my, I've got some handwritten notes and some cues to go by, but I don't know if you can see that. I wrote Danielle's cat, like a note to mention that, because I love your Instagram or Facebook post with your cat. They're always charming, funny, kind of a dose of happy humor.
Well, nobody doesn't like to see a cat. If you don't like to see a cat, then I don't know what to tell you. Check your soul. Figure out what's wrong.
Let me ask you this:
if you're angry at a cat,
but. Let me ask you about your cat. And forgive me for forgetting his name.
Her name is Lucy.
Lucy, I knew that.
If I crack the door, she'll probably come in and visit. But
what time does Lucy like to wake you up in the morning? If that's
Lucy is very polite. She doesn't wake me up. She waits to hear that I'm stirring, and then she comes and jumps on me. So she's the best cat that ever was. She's like, I think once or twice she's given me the tap, like, hey, it's time. But she generally doesn't. It's a surprise if she does that. She generally waits. If she hears the slightest bit of like movement that I'm awake, she's like, yeah. Is it time? And then she comes up and lays on my chest for a little bit. And then when it's time, I go like, all right, let's get up. And then she gets her feeding.
Yep. Well, keep sharing those posts. It's always something to look forward to. And anybody that has dogs or cats, you can probably relate to the humor. I think everybody finds their animals funny.
They are funny. Animals are funny. And they're innocent. They have no, even the ones that are a little nasty, like they don't have actual, you know, evil in them at all. They have no ill will. They just, if they're a little bit grumpy or whatever, it's just because it's like an instinct or something, you know. So animals are the best. They're the best people.
I have seen, like, without naming, well, it wouldn't be names anybody would know, but I have seen like just cantankerous old men that have alienated everybody in their network, but they have this sweetest dog that brings the giggles and the happiness out of them. And I'm like,
absolutely.
That's good for you. I'm happy that that's happening.
Yeah. I know a lot of people who don't really like people very much, but they love their animals.
Oh, man.
It's probably happening more and more.
Yes. Wow. Snow Globe. I don't know why I didn't mention this first. I was kind of saving it. It's not even for last because there's the title track. There's other songs. Front to back, I just like this listen. This driving in the car, that's when I usually listen to music, driving in the car. And if you're going somewhere for 30 or 45 minutes, which in my town often I am, you can play the whole record. So, but Snow Globe, the main riff, do you remember how it came to you, how it came out, and kind of a three-part question, which Gibson are you playing on this record? Is it one that you still use?
So, all right. So first answer is that and I talk about this in my, I did do Snow Globe on the Patreon. So I talk about this a little bit. The intro, the pick in part to that was influenced by Make Me a Palette by Mississippi John Hurt. So when I was learning that, it's kind of how I started developing my style, because I was learning some Mississippi John Hurt songs out of this transcription book by Stephen Grossman. Stephen Grossman is like, he's a curator of a lot of these old blues, acoustic blues artists, and you know, he puts out transcription books and all that, and he's very, anyway, and he probably would, he himself would probably be like, you're not doing it right, because because I would learn it, but then I would be like, I wouldn't necessarily learn it note for note, and it was more like I was getting the feel for it, and that's kind of how I developed my picking style, like my thumb. I'm kind of a thunk thunk, like a bam bam, mm-hmm. kind of player. I do a lot of plucking, like pick pick pick, and that might be some of like my funky kind of influence, like my Prince influence or whatever. Like I want to hear like a pop, you know. Anyway, so
that sound really comes through on Box of Troubles.
Yeah, it starts to develop more on that album for sure. But there's hints of it that start, like there's a few tracks on actually like Nothing Romantic. Snow Globe, the one we talked about before, Better, and the song Cry all have. That's like, oh, I had just started learning how to do that picking thing, and I was developing my own way to do it in a way. Not my own, you know, other people be like, that's not, you know, your own way, but it is sort of. Like, I think you kind of get, when I teach that type of picking, I always say, like, find your own feel. Like, it's your own heartbeat that's in it, you know? So, and your fingers are different than anybody else's. Everybody has their own thing. So you're not going to do it exactly like someone else. And why the hell would you want to? So I was learning Make Me a Palette, and then I started messing with that and, like, kind of rearranging that riff a little bit. Or like, and then I wrote Snow Globe from that. That was definitely a big influence on that song.